This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Wednesday, March 8th, 2024 is International Women.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. Good evening and welcome to The Essentials on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. You are on The Reset. This evening, we are going to have ourselves, as usual, a wonderful conversation. We are going to look at some of the issues which are taking place at home. Last week, we were in Kenya and we had a wonderful conversation with Mr. Dangari Music, an up-and-coming artist out of Kenya. He's actually a dancehall gospel artist. You know, very good guy. Seemingly, the music is of good quality, good sound, good vibes. Sound like a lot like where he borrows the genre from. So, you know, looking forward to hearing about him through our good friend Landlord as we continue to make that collaboration work and we reach across the waters, we get into the various countries around the world and we touch and talk to persons wherever they may be. This evening, the conversation is going to be on economics. We are going to be having a discussion around the recently released IMF Article 4 report. And I believe that there are some important takeaways, very, very important takeaways from this particular report. It's been reported widely in the local dailies. I had a couple of quotes there, one or two. But I think fundamentally, usually when these things come out, they tend to, you know, either get twisted one way or the other, depending on, you know, what a person's point of view is, what their philosophy is, what their political leaning is, who they like in the moment, and that sort of thing. This evening, we want to not do that. We don't do that. Generally speaking, we don't do that. We usually try to be as objective, as honest, sensitive, and balanced. And I think that's the way discussions need to be had. For example, when something is good, you identify it and you celebrate it. When it is not, you identify it and you talk about what the solutions are. And you don't take the view that, well, you know, if it sounds good this time because I like X, you know, then I'll talk about it. And if it sounds bad the next time because I don't like Y, then I won't talk about it. So the Article 4 is done yearly. This is one for 2023. And the IMF usually comes in. They usually have a mission and they go, a number of persons are here, and they meet with all stakeholders. They meet with persons from the chamber. They meet with persons from civil society. They meet with individuals who run significant institutions within the country. So they will meet with the head of banks, for example. They will meet with the head of, I guess, the accounting association, the the individuals who are financial analysts. They garner information from multiple sources. And of course, they speak with the government, the various, certainly with the Ministry of Finance. They, I would assume, I'm just speculating here, I would assume that they also are privy to certain, you know, information that the government may give to them. By that I mean in documents. They also have statistical information which comes out of the our statistical institute. They may have information which comes out of the central bank. They certainly may be speaking to the individuals over there, Shivagalan, Leng, and his colleagues in the policy. But you know what I'm talking about, that institution over there at UB. So I would say all things considered, they take a very comprehensive view of the country, and they get an opportunity to feel many point of views. I've had the pleasure of sitting in on a number of these from different perspective with the chamber, when I was with the chamber, and also when I used to be with Bank of the Bahamas, I had the opportunity of meeting with persons from there. And so you get a feel that they ask different things, they ask for information, or they discuss areas which are confirming. So they may hear something at one place and then they go to another place and they then pull all of that together, and it provides them with solid basis on which to operate. But let's start where we ought to start with this one. The highlight. It says the Bahamas economy continues to rebound vigorously, driven by large tourism inflow. Real GDP growth is estimated to reach 4.3% in 2023, which is old news, 14.4% in 2022, old news, while the unemployment rate fell below 9%. Inflation has been on a downward path since mid-2022, backed by a strong recovery of tourism. The current account deficit is projected to have narrowed to 6.2% of GDP in 2023. The overall look at the economy, it's that the economic outlook is favorable, albeit with downside risks. We'll come back to that. But let's stick for a minute at the first part. The economic outlook is favorable. I think that when we get into stuff like this, when we take a look at a report like this, the first thing we need to do is to pause, to appreciate and accept the things which are going right. The fact that things have gone right. And we need to celebrate them. And you may ask why use the word celebrate. I'm always saying that. But when you understand and appreciate how bad it was, or how bad it could have been, and maybe even how bad it may yet become, you really start to appreciate that when you see progress, when progress is made, it is for the benefit of us all. It's for the benefit of the country. So we have to celebrate those good things. Tourism is percolating at a level not seen on this side of consciousness in the Bahamas, ever. And that is a two-sided sword, double-edged sword. Because on one hand, we are doing better for the most part than we've ever done before in terms of just absolute numbers, before we drill down into the value of those numbers and think about, you know, stopover versus cruise. But before getting into those, just the sheer number, the Bahamas is doing better than it has ever done in its entire history. It's simply astounding. The double edge is that despite doing that, despite being at record levels, there are still spots of weaknesses which have been observed in the overall economic machinery. So if you have tourism, which is our largest contributor, significantly more than the next one, which is financial services. So depending on the measurement, you could get tourism directly and indirectly contributing about 70, maybe even 75% of the economy, compared to, financial services, which may range somewhere between, say, 25, 27, depending on the number again. So when you have that type of a disparity in terms of the contribution, and the thing which contributes the most is at its best it has ever been, not that there isn't potential for additional growth, but it is at the level which is historical, has never been here before. And still there are signs of, you know, some weaknesses. It gives you pause to be humble in looking at what is in front of you. So yes, you have to celebrate, but you have to celebrate in a way which says we are going to recognize and accept that which is going right. But at the same time, we are going to also respect that there are some things which need some extra effort, some extra focus, some extra work, and we're going to get to those in short order. Because if we did, and if we do that, then certainly this good over here and the effect of the remedial act that we are going to bring is going to make life that much better. So the IMF is of the view that the overall outlook for the Bahamas is positive. Now, that augurs well for somewhere down the road when the rating agencies come around again. And we will see. Because right now, as we speak, there's a little bit of a conundrum with the credit market. I think the Prime Minister has spoken to this. Other persons have spoken to this. Because we are trying to, and by we I mean just persons who follow this or may comment on it, we're trying to reconcile this rapid comeback, this rapid consolidation of the economy, better than it was before. Pre-2019 up to 2019 was historic years, impacted certainly by Dorian and then COVID. So those became rapidly, significantly underperforming years, largely because of the pandemic and the climate impact. But at 2019, before those, we were at our best historical levels. I think that was the best performance for the economy in terms of overall GDP. We've surpassed that. The numbers which were attained in that year, 2019 fiscal, are being surpassed in tourism. So we are at our bestest ever. And we want to make sure that that continues. But obviously, we have to work out and think about what are some of the downside risks which need to be addressed in order to make that optimize. Because right now, you get the impression that we're a little bit suboptimal. And that is why you have a bit of a conundrum where we are performing very, very well. Everyone will admit that the administration certainly believes that. But when you look at the response of the credit market in terms of the spreads which are being attached to Bahamian loans, it's not telling the exact same story. Now, on balance, at this point, as we speak, it's telling a way better story than it was in 2022. So we were looking at spreads of 14%, 1,400 basis points, 14% or more. Today, it's slashed by about half and it's down to 7 or 6%. Much, much better. But when that number is compared with peers, so when you compare to what Jamaica gets, when you compare to what Barbados, maybe not Barbados, but say Trinidad, maybe when you compare to other countries within the Caribbean, on average, not one-to-one, but on average, the Bahamas spread is about 3% higher. That in and of itself, even before you get into the numbers, even before you get into the weeds, just, you know, peripherally, thinking about the Bahamas as a country in terms of wealth vis-a-vis other countries within the region, one would automatically anticipate, because the Bahamas has done well perennially, and a number of the other countries have struggled, but Jamaica, for example, have struggled economically significantly over a number of decades. But when you compare the spread that Jamaica is receiving at this point in time, it's significantly less than the Bahamas. And that's a good thing for Jamaica, not a good thing for the Bahamas. So we are asking the question, and I think this is exactly the question the Prime Minister is asking, why is this so? Why is it that the credit market has not yet responded to what we believe to be good economic performance, to what we have reported as record-breaking arrivals in tourism, to what we have shown is an expansion over the last 2 years, an expansion of top-line GDP. We're now solidly, firmly in the $3 billion range, and based on the fiscal strategy report, trending towards that $4 billion target and maybe the $16 billion in overall GDP. And the 3 million I speak about is total government revenue. Yeah? So we are there. We're able to squeeze this out of the economy, but the credit market has not yet responded to that. So it begs the question, what is it that we have to reconcile? And I think we kind of know the answers. The answers are there. The issue, though, is, are we ready, are we willing and prepared to make the adjustments which are going to lead us to a closer resolution on that particular issue? The report talks about the risk. Some of the risks are, you know, tourism could suffer a downturn. We understand that. There could be economic slowdown because of impact from, say, the U.S. market, which is now fully involved or more involved in a number of the skirmishes around the world. We don't know how that may impact inflation. There may be a slowdown. But the bulk of our tourism market comes from the United States, maybe over 80% of it. The question is there going to be some sort of adverse development there which is going to impact us? We hope not, but that's one of the risks. There's also the ever-present risk of a climate event. So a storm, big storm, disruptive, create significant damage. There is always going to be that, and we'll never get rid of that. But how are we managing this? And then we get to the point where I believe is the real crux of the matter from my perspective. And that is the fact that the Bahamas currently, and the IMF has projected this in very, very clear relief, because it has basically said that the Bahamas is going to see growth in its economy over, you know, the next couple of years. We are now in 2024. So it's anticipating a growth of 2.3% in 2024. In 2025, 1.8%. In 2026, 1.6%. 2027, 1.5%. And it's also projected the same number for 2028. What's important about these numbers? Not that, just that they're small, because they are small. They are below 2%. That's the first starting point for me. Why 2%? Because when you look back over the years, over the last decade or so, when you do an analysis of the growth of the Bahamas over that particular period of time, you would start to readily appreciate that the best growth performance in those years, recent years, has been somewhere around like 2.2%. That's been 2.2 or 2.3. That's where we kind of max out at. Now you have the impact that came in 2022 and 2023, largely because there was a comeback from the impact of Dorian and then the pandemic. So those were large grow back. You know, so you were looking at 14.4% and 4.3. Those are outliers. Just not going, that don't happen normally. You know, if you have $100, you normally have $100 and you lose 20. And then you get back to 100, your growth is 20%. So that 20%, that growth become exaggerated because of the fact that you have lost a portion. So in our analysis, we kind of leave those outlier years and kind of look at what the historical norm has been for the longest while. And the historical norm has been just at or below 2%. What does that mean if the IMF projection holds true? Well, 1.8, 1.6, 1.5, it naturally registers on the reader that that is trending downwards. The Bahamas right now needs to be in a position where growth is increasing. Have to be. Because without additional growth, I believe, this is my submission to you, without additional growth, the ability to sustain revenue, that's government revenue, this is the business end of the economy. The revenue needed to do the roads, to do the school, to do the hospital, to do social services, to respond to the police, the defense force, to respond to emergencies, to deal with any issue of national importance. Without growth, additional growth, that over time becomes challenge. And it brings the question, how sustainable is the current level of revenue that we enjoy, not we, but the government, and yeah, by extension, the country, that the country enjoys, because the availability of resource, I think the benefit that the public gets, the resources, the goods, the public goods that the country, the citizenry enjoys, is always going to be a function of the ability of the government to afford it. So yes, the amount of revenue that it can glean from the economy, that it can actually take out of the economy, is going to be challenged if there isn't additional growth. So when we look at that as a factor, one of the factors in terms of the downside which needs to be paid attention to, I believe that, you know, that should feature very highly on the agenda of every single policymaker. They should be asking themselves a question. Why is it that having laid out a reasonably comprehensive plan which seeks to get us to 25% revenue to GDP, why is it that we are still in a place where the growth is floundering? And oftentimes this happens, and I think this is where a lot of reconciliation needs to take place as we have these conversations. Because growth in government revenue does not signal growth in the economy. Sometimes, as a matter of fact, don't always happen, but sometimes growth in government revenue could have an adverse impact on the actual growth of the economy, because usually that growth comes as a result of taxation, some taxes, some fees. And it may have adverse pressure on some individual to decide, well, I don't just want to do business like that anymore. And they may fall up. Or it may have create a circumstance where it puts downward pressure on the demand for a particular product or within a particular sector. So the growth in revenue that we are realizing, creeping up to that $4 billion target, which has been outlined by the Ministry of Finance and the government, the current administration, that is holding well on paper, yeah. And we did realize the overall projected revenue. I think it was, you know, the difference between what was budgeted and what was actually realized, there was just absolutely nothing to write home about. So we are there. So that is increasing. But the worrying part of it, at least for me, is we are increasing government revenue in an environment where the overall economy is still growing, it's growing. So that's a good thing, because if there was no growth or it was regressing, then that would be absolutely a disaster. But the growth in government revenue is being realized with historical growth rate, low historical growth rates in the overall economy. And that, therefore, I think needs to be looked at. But when you take all of that into consideration, when you take the entire report into consideration, the whole thing, the good, the bad, the ugly, the everything, and you kind of distill it to its essence, you must walk away. You have to walk away feeling that, yes, this is a positive piece of information coming out of the IMF. We have seen other reports which have not been this positive. Now, I know there are persons out there who are going to roll their eyes at me and say, well, you know, what exactly are you talking about? What is positive in this? The truth is, we have to look at the narrative. It was not too long ago when Standard & Poor's and S&P was saying, you know, crazy things about the country. It was not so long ago after those two entities said those crazy things about the country that the IMF essentially came in and in a very backhanded way kind of validate their statements. We're saying, we don't trust your projection. We don't believe you will make it. The administration at the time says, well, we don't believe what you believe because we think we are going to make it. And they did. They actually hit the target almost to the dollar. Not quite, but almost to the dollar. At the time though, the arguments around whether or not the government could secure sufficient revenue only on the basis of enforcement and collection and no new taxes. That was the argument of the IMF. The government says, yes, we definitely can. And so the government had no new taxes, they had enforcement and collection, but they also had increased fees. The difference in that conversation is just nomenclature. You call it fees or you call it taxes. The same thing, end up at the same day, it's revenue. So the point though is, having increased fees and certain other areas up to a point without having a system of normalized taxation which responds to whatsoever growth is in the economy, whatsoever success is being, economic success is being enjoyed by various entities. If that is not there, at some point in time, you run the risk of those fees kind of plateauing, yeah? Because some of them are driven by the demand too. Of course, we know some of them, you just no place else to get that type of a service but from the government. And so you have to go to the government. It's not going to fall off a cliff, but it could plateau. And when that happens, if that happens or it drops, then it brings some question to the sustainability of the revenue. But I say all of that as context, the important issue and the point to pay attention to at this point in time is that I believe that where we are today, the country's economy has sufficiently normalized, and the IMF says this. I'll read for you shortly, as soon as I find the exact quote. Has sufficiently normalized so as to facilitate a different type of outlook. a different type of a thinking about where we are. The report noted that the Bahamas economy is in the midst of a solid expansion. A strong recovery of tourism has helped regain the ground that was lost after Hurricane Dorian and the COVID crisis. Unemployment is at its lowest since 2008, while inflation has been on a downward path and is lower than most regional peers. You know, inflation in the Bahamas is that much more advantageous than the rest of the Caribbean, most countries in the Caribbean. Unemployment is at its lowest when measured as a percentage. Now, I believe that that number demands an asterisk, because when you look at the actual number, I think it's the size of the workforce, the total persons or the persons who are actively looking for work, that number has reduced. And as a consequence, the percentage has also reduced. So it's a good place to be, because unemployment is a great indication. It has implications for creditworthiness. It's looked at by international agency, rating agency, and it gives you a great feel as to how much your workforce is employed. Persons are doing productive things. But there's some noise in that particular statistics compared to previous years. And so when we look at it, we can't just say, well, it's at its lowest. As a percentage, yes. But in absolute terms, in absolute numbers, based on the research that I did, based on the numbers that I saw, no. But that's not fatal to our discussion. That's not fatal to where we are. The IMF said what the IMF said. It says the Bahamas economy is in the midst of a solid expansion. And I believe that what this report did, the Article 4 report, is that it signaled a confirmation of a lot of the information that we already knew. But more importantly, and I think this is where we should focus, in many ways, it is a validation. It is a validation of the government policies, the policies that the government is getting right. This report, in a number of ways, validate that. And it does that very sensitively. It does that in a wise way and in a very balanced way, because right behind the validation, it points out that there are some risks and there are some areas which need attention. Of course, the IMF can only suggest. They can't come inside here and tell the administration what to do. So everything that they say is just merely a suggestion. The report goes on to say that the more favorable economic environment provides space for the authorities to reorient their policy framework towards the pursuit of greater fiscal sustainability, social equity, and climate resilience. They said it in those words I said earlier, that the value of this moment is in the fact that the economy has sufficiently stabilized, reestablished, to give the current administration greater room and comfort to now become a little bit more creative, maybe, a little bit more aggressive, definitely, and more pointedly strategic in looking at the areas which are going to afford an opening up of the economy. So let's go back to the point I made earlier. The economy is projected per the IMF, and you know the way these things work. If you have 10 agencies putting out projections, it's likely that the 10 agencies will have different numbers. The government will have its own set of numbers too. The government does not expect the country to grow at such a low rate. but not much faster. I didn't remind myself immediately what those numbers are, but not much faster. So the point I make with that is we have to take these projections with a grain of salt, but they are indicative of, you know, knowledgeable thinking. Persons who have the ability and the resources to do the analysis, to run the scenarios, to do the modeling, to come up with some sort of a reasonable framework as to where we may land, yeah? So the report is saying to government, it's time to reorient your policy positions, your policy framework. And reorient kind of suggests, well, if you are oriented in a westwardly direction, that's where you kind of want to go. But over time, you realize, some things are not going, true not, as far as traveling west is concerned. Some things are not moving as fast as they should. Some things we thought would be working in a particular way is not working. Some things are absolutely going in the wrong direction. We now need to spend some time fixing those and trying to get them to a place where they can become more productive to the economy. It's important and interesting to think about, who's saying what. Because what the IMF has said here in this statement, the governor of the central bank said maybe 2 years ago, at least a year and a half ago, at the Nassau conference, the governor, John Rawls, said that one of the biggest risks the Bahamas face, and he was thinking about the future at that point in time, one of the biggest risks the Bahamas face was a reversion to our historical growth potential. Very, very important statement. Our growth potential. Do we have the potential to grow by 3%? Do we have the potential to grow by 5%? Do we have the potential to grow by 6%? On paper, any number is possible. On paper, having regard for the policies that are in place, the extent to which they are working, the output of those policies, the extent to which they are implemented, the extent to which expenditure is being used and the value which is coming back from that expenditure. When you take all of those into consideration, when you take into consideration the educational framework of the country, the output of the educational system, when you take into consideration the health framework of the country and the impact that is having, the state of health of the people within the country, when you look at the social affairs, whether individuals are being actively included and involved in the productive aspect of the economy, or they are kind of, edging themselves to the periphery of society as a result of maybe poverty or being disadvantaged, or as the Prime Minister had said a while back, not given a second chance to make good on certain decisions which they have made in the past. When you take all of those into consideration, they will determine how much, how fast, and how far the country can grow. That is the growth potential. And that is what needs attention. So basically what I'm saying is, if you have the ability to, on paper, make $100 a day, but in order to make that $100 per day, you have to do these five things. And you are doing three of those things, and you're doing them well. And you find yourself making $75. Until and unless you make adjustments to the other two, you're not going to hit the 100. Maybe, they're going to be a windfall. Sometimes some things happen. So there are some days when, good fortune just turn up. It happens all the time. But you don't run any system just on the hope of good fortune. You put things in place and you make them work to your benefit, yeah? So the point here is, for the country using that $100 analogy, to ensure that it earns the full $100, you need to fix those two things. So we get to the $100. And then we need to stop and assess, why is it that we've been earning $100 for the last 10 months, for the last 24 months? What is stopping us from doing $150 or $200? Because the $100 has become our locked-in growth potential. And until we unleash some other things, either inject some things in the economy or free some things up which already exist, which they potentially are issues which are causing them not to be as effective as they could have been. Like, for example, the impact that energy may have on production. When you have a high cost of energy and then it have an impact on the private sector, these type of things. So you hear all the time about the ease of doing business. The whole point there is, if it's easier to do business, then more people will do business, more people will be productive, and the economy will grow, the government will make more revenue. But until you fix those things which cause the business to not be easy to do, then you won't have that growth, yeah? And that's kind of where we are. And I think that is what the IMF is saying when it says, the more favorable economic environment, that is, they are agreeing, they are underlining very, very clearly that the Bahamas is now in a place where the economic environment is more favorable. And they say, consequently, that should give them the space, the authorities, the administration, the government, that should give the authorities the space to reorient their policy framework. So, in that statement alone, the IMF is saying to you, we believe that there is some of your policy framework that needs work. Now, there's always can be an argument there someplace, because I may not agree with you. You believe there's some things that I'm doing which need to be changed, and I don't believe you. You may believe some things I'm doing need to change now. I believe that they need to change, but not now. Maybe later down the road. So these are the space where you will need reconciliation. So as you read through those things, these things, you can't take them in absolute terms, because you have to recognize it's coming from one entity to another, and both of those entities has autonomy. The government don't have to listen to a thing the IMF says. It's advisable that they don't totally ignore them, but they don't have to listen to a thing they say. The point here, though, is we are at a place now where it's a little bit better, maybe much better, depending on where you sit. And consequently, the time is right for a rethinking of the policy framework. And that is important, because if the opportunity is there, it should not be missed. The last thing I'll say on this before we take a break is, the report went on to say, public finances are improving, although debt remains high. I want you to reflect on that for a minute. And as we go into the break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that. Because I have said here before and in other spaces that the single most important element of our economic arrangement over maybe the next 5 years or so is going to be how well we manage our debt circumstance. And it all ties together. It all ties together. Public finances are improving, yes. Debt remains high. Now, that high debt is a function of some of the things that we got hit with COVID and so on and so forth. But when you think about the call for reorientation of policy, when you think about the belief that the growth rate is going to be well within our historical experience, when you think about some of the potential downside which could emerge, hurricane, so on and so forth, then you now start to understand that despite doing well, without proper focus, without proper management, without effective debt management strategy, the debt that we currently have could remain a significant anchor to the forward growth of the country. It could. And I'll tell you why when we come back from this break. Or at least I'll share with you what I believe are some of the reasons. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. On Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. I want you to join me on the other side. And if you want to chime in, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, our text line, 422-4796. Don't move. Come right back.
Run away from the norm and run in love. On February 10th at 6 a.m. from Arawaki.
Love is in the air.
Friendship, love, and romance will take to the asphalt for 3 romantic miles as Four Seasons Race Management partners with the City of Hope for its second annual Running in Love.
Love is in the air.
It's a 5K fun run walk. It's a Valentine-themed event for family, friends, and lovers. Sign up as a duo with who you love or who loves you. Register at www.fourseasonsracemanagement.com. City of Hope says, are you running in love too? Register today.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions.
Next Level Solutions.
Solutions.
At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
You can get it. Succeed at last. Look here. Persecution you must fear. Win and lose, you've got to get your share. Got your mind set on a dream. You can get it. No heart in the same now. You can get it if you really want.
And welcome back to The Essentials on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. We are having a conversation. We're looking at the recently released IMF report, Article 4 for 2023. We're going through it. We're not going through exactly every single thing. I would encourage persons. So there are two versions. There's one which is a 86-page version, and there's another which only takes out some limited issues, and they tend to be what they consider to be the more pointed issues, a smaller document. And so if you want to kind of roll through that. But I believe it's incumbent on all persons, citizens, residents, individuals who are interested in these type of things, because you hear it all the time. You hear persons having these discussions. You hear them calling on radio, and they say things and they express views which are, you know, sometimes not well informed, and in some instances it's expressed from a place of, and obviously that's all you can do. you express it from a place of your understanding at that point in time. And that's fine. That's totally fine. What, though, is not fine is not taking the time to sufficiently inform yourself so you can really develop a broad enough perspective to bring balance to the conversation. So one of the ways that these things always get reported is the reporters go for the power that sell. And I can tell you this, because oftentimes when a report like this comes out, I will, you know, sometime I get interviewed and I know what I said. I know how long I've spoken. And, you know, it's that one thing which sometimes is a cautionary point. So you may say, as in this report, you know, it's a great report. It's a good report, all things considered. And you talk about that, and then you say, but, you know, here are some things which needs to be considered. Some of the things need to be looked at. You know, I like to say, you know, there is cause for celebration. However, let's not celebrate too much. Well, the reporter is going to report the part which says, don't celebrate too much. That's how these things get reported. So in order for you to bring sufficient balance to your conversation and to your understanding of these issues, you have to take time to inform yourself. So when we left, we talk about the debt itself, right? The prognosis for debt to GDP, which was at one point in time, I think a little bit over 100%, then it was at 100%. Now we're looking at 27, 28, for that to be down to 78%, yeah? The good thing about it is at this point in time, there has been no pronouncement. No one is saying that the Bahamas debt is not sustainable. It's high. But there has been no discussion and no need for a consensus around the idea that there is any lack of sustainability in the debt at this point in time. Broadly speaking. And I readily understand why that is. We'll talk about it in a minute. But the level of the debt and the state the debt is in and the impact that that could have on the rest of the operation of the economy is important. I spoke earlier about the fact that right now the Bahamas gets spreads on its internationally listed debt of 700 basis points, which is 7%, compared to 1,400, which is 14% in 2022. What I mean is, whatsoever the risk-free rate is, so let's say the risk-free rate is 5%. In 2022, the Bahamas was paying 19%. Today, that would be down to 7 plus 5 is 12. Improvement. But if the Bahamas is compared to, say, Jamaica or another country, on average within the region, using the same risk-free of 5%, the Bahamas would be paying 12, while those other countries would be paying 9. 3% difference. That's a conundrum for many persons. A little bit even for me, but I can rationalize why that might be so, and we will try to kind of unpack some of that in a minute. The impact of debt, even in an environment where the economics has now become more favorable, is a bit challenging. And the reason it's challenging is that when you look at the projections going outwards, while I think today, or at least in the last budget, it would have been somewhere around just below, maybe above 15%, maybe 19%, but not solidly at 20% for sure. The projections going forward is that cost of debt, that means the interest you pay on debt, whether it's local or international, And of course, international debt is always a little bit sharper for us because local debt is our stuff and we can better manage that. The money stays in the country, so on and so forth. But overall, total expenditure on debt, cost of debt, is going to be averaging about 20%. What that means is that as a proportion of the overall expenditure of the country, the cost of debt continues to increase in dominance. I don't want to say it is the single largest number. I don't think it is. But it is one of the largest numbers in the expenditure side of the budget. It's significant. 20%. One in five goes to pay debt. Now, if the Bahamas is, and this is where we're going to try to tie this up. If the Bahamas is able to grow its economy by reorienting some of these policies. And by these policies, we're talking about looking at energy, looking at how you fix BPL, looking at how you fix the state agencies, SOEs, state-owned agencies. For that, you have about maybe $400, $500 million out of the budget which goes to those entities. And as I've always indicated, I believe that money spent in state-owned agencies are almost more, when they do not produce the result that they ought to produce, is really very much more egregious than in some other places. And this is a reason for that. Let's say we have an agency like BAIC, which is, I'm not saying this is what it does, but it is supposed to be helping local entities become ready for the export market. I think that should be part of its mandate, yeah? So if it does that well, and these entities become ready for the export market and actually export goods, whatsoever those goods are, then those entities will be earning foreign exchange. And that foreign exchange will expand the overall economy, expand GDP, make the country better, more foreign currency come in. Good? So let's say we send, you know, $1,000 over to them each time, each year, and say, that's what you need to spend, and you need to get these four or five companies to be up and running and selling abroad. And every time we send them that $1,000, we get no company doing it. So two things are happening. One, we spend the absolute $1,000, yeah? But we also lost the opportunity. Time is gone. We lost the opportunity of improving or getting or facilitating that increase in revenue, that increase in economy, that increase in commerce, manufacturing, whatsoever it is, that increase in employment. We've lost that too. So next year, in order to chase that promise again, we have to go back and spend that or more. And let's say the same thing happened over and repeatedly, as it happens over and repeatedly. I think there is a consensus that a lot of these agencies do not operate optimally and do not produce at the level expected. So we are effectively spending in a policy direction which is reasonable. It's reasonable to want to expand commerce. It's reasonable to want to get companies ready for international business. So that's a good policy. But the implementation of that policy isn't working. And I'm just speaking about this broadly, like in a scenario. It's not working because the results are not happening. We do not find those four companies exporting in year one and in year two are growing. So if that is not happening, that means we're spending money without getting the benefit. And that is now going to create a drag on the overall budget. So when we talk about policy adjustment, We definitely will have to look at state-owned agency. The IMF singled out a number of areas. It talked about taxation, which is a big elephant in the room. We'll come back to that. It talked about governance improvement at BPL. It talked about governance and resourcing of the resolution unit within the central bank and the Financial Stability Council. It is saying that these are some of the areas which, if fixed, could help the economy. You talk about having better quality information or more timely information from the various reporting agencies. So there's some work that we have to do as a country. And this is where the reorientation needs to take place. And then if that was to happen, it would be a good thing. You know, like I said recently to a reporter, I believe that The reasonable reader, and I'm not talking about somebody who look at the cover and then listen to what some other people say. If you actually read the thing, the reasonable reader will conclude that the narrative in this document is generally positive, even though the position have some warnings of some challenges, which rightly it should. It can't just come and say, hey, things are going well, but don't pay attention to this. This is what it is. So that shift, which I just kind of tried to explain on the reform which are needed in these areas, those are the areas which are going to help us to better grow the economy. And when the economy starts to grow, then the government is going to be signaling to the rest of the world that it is in a better position to pay its debt. It therefore is going to be in a stronger position to reconcile this difference, this conundrum between performance and the level of rate it currently received. So when we signal greater expansion, the rates will come down. When the rates come down, the cost of debt will become cheaper. So that 20% projection that we're looking at out into the next couple of years, that may start trending downwards if we were to realize the growth. The point I'm making is that so much revolves around moving and opening up. Well, I don't want to use opening up because, you know, we say that the Bahamas have a very open economy. That may be misinterpreted. But, you know, creating or facilitating the ability to grow at a faster and stronger rate. Not by magic, because it can't happen overnight, but simply by doing the things which have been recognized over and repeatedly as not being done or not done properly and fixing them. That is where the work is. And that work holds implication for the debt, because at the end of the day, debt, however it may come, is a function of the fact that you need to spend more than you earn. So the growth in the economy is certainly a big part of that. When we get to the circumstance where there's now more growth, there is less cost to debt, it means that we are able to pay down the debt faster, get it to a level which does not exert the same level of pressure that it currently is exerting on the overall budgetary arrangements. When that changes, at the point that changes, we could make the exact same statement which the IMF just made in this report. We could say at that point in time, now that the debt circumstance is much better, the government now has greater room to again reorient its policy position. It now may need to take on some more, a greater level of ambitiousness, for want of a better word, in terms of what it wants to do in, say, Inagua or Mayaguana. The fact is, the quote-unquote richer you become, the better your circumstance, your economic circumstance become, the more risk you can take, the more aggressive you can become in your strategies, in your planning. Yeah? And so it's worthwhile that we pay attention to what is being said here. In going through the report itself, I have come to the conclusion, this is my conclusion, that it's a very structured roadmap. It provides a very structure. It's a structured pathway for alternate policy positions, which should be considered carefully by the government as it seeks to unlock potential, which has to date been retarded by lack of consistent focus, deliberate, fulsome policy interventions. The report is rich with policy guidance of notable relevance. What am I saying there? The things I see in the report, the suggestions which are in the report, bears out great congruence with the fiscal strategy report. If not in the same words, at least in essence as to where the fiscal strategy report say that we want to go. The numbers, $16 billion in X time, $4 billion in government revenue, 25% revenue to GDP, debt to GDP down to 50% by 2030. Interestingly, the IMF is projecting that not to be achieved by 2030, but somewhere around 32, 33, 2 or 3 years later. Not fatal at all. But further out, yeah? The point here is, we know that there are things which could have been done, should have been done, but have not been done. And by no means are these things easy to do. We have to be mindful of that. We have to be respectful of that. We have to be sensitive to that fact. Because oftentimes we have these discussions and, you know, I'm sure persons will, some will agree, some won't agree. But we always have these discussions largely from kind of our point of view, the way we see it. This is how it should be. For example, if it was easy for a administration in the Bahamas to impose, to implement, to introduce income tax, whether it's corporation tax or personal income tax, if it was easy, it would have been done already. No question. I believe it's one of the hardest decisions facing every single administration which has been around for a while. Now, the difference between the current administration, maybe even a bit of the last one, but certainly the current administration. The difference between the current administration and those past is in this moment, there is seemingly a greater urgency for consideration of that. It is. We are at a point in time where I believe, and I'm not an advocate for income tax. I'm not an advocate for corporation tax. I'm not an advocate for taxes. But at the end of the day, we have to be sensible. And by we, I mean us, all the people in the country. Because the reason it is difficult for government to do or to approach the tax reforms which might be necessary is because public sentiment is 100% almost against it. Plain and simple. The government is not shy or afraid to make the changes which need to be made, unless it believes that making those changes could lead to it being punished. Because every decision, or such a monumental decision, have to be assessed through two lenses. One, purely through you are in charge of the government running the country. But if you're practical, if you're honest, fair, and reasonable person, you'll also accept that that must be run through the filter of how will this impact my party, the party that makes the administration up at this point in time. Nobody who is sensible in government, in politics, is going to ignore that. And the people in politics are very smart, despite what some of us like to say. You know, people just figure, well, some of these persons don't think, or they don't, you know. Yeah, people say varied things. But they're smart, they're brilliant, they're strategists. They understand. They know you sometimes more than you know yourself. And the truth of the matter is, the Bahamas is retarded in making some of the changes because the Bahamas, the populace, don't want it. Unfortunately, the government is not in a position to find major alternative. So as we creep away from, you know, one year to the next, to the next, to the next, what is becoming more evident as you watch these report and you watch the discussion and you listen to what the government has been doing and you appreciate the fact that government revenue has increased to historical levels, breaking 3.2.8 billion and then into 3 billion and trending towards 4 billion. That has never happened. And still yet, the economic affairs of the country isn't settled. So when you take all of those into consideration, you come to the place where you start to think, well, maybe we are kind of exhausting every single option that we have. And then, like the Prime Minister said, maybe taxes will be, if they ever, will be a change of last resort. And that's fine. The question, though, is, not for government, but for us as taxpayers to consider, is let's assume that we have a ailment, a leg, yeah? So we got a cut, yeah. Or we went around the corner there and then people who didn't close the gate and the dog come out and bite you on your foot, yeah? And you fail to pay attention to that bite. You dabble with it. You put some alcohol on it, a little bit of gauze, but you don't seek medical attention. You play around with it and it gets bad, yeah? And it gets worse because you're limited in what you can do. You're not afforded the opportunity to do anything else. And then there come a point in time when you realize, geez, I really have no choice, but I must seek medical attention. And then you go out and you get the best medical attention possible, the best medical resources, the most expensive one, the best doctors in the world. And they come back to you and say, good, we can help you, but we're going to have to cut this foot off. Because cutting the foot off at that point in time is the absolute best result that can be achieved because of lack of attention. The point I'm making is this. Consider this. Yes, we may not want certain things, but what if we wait too late, still have to make that decision, and that decision turns out, as a result of the dilly-dally and the delay, to be near fatally too expensive? What if? So some of these things we need to consider. And government will therefore have to, at some point in time, and the process, I know the process is ongoing. They're looking at the studies and all of that sort of thing. And I'm only saying this because the IMF believes, in its report, the IMF believe that taxation and the introduction specifically of income tax is a very viable option which the government needs to consider. The IMF, though, readily accepts that the government may not be able to do that. We may have difficulty doing that. And goes on to suggest some other ways which that could be done, including increasing value-added tax to 15%. It suggests that in this very report. Now, when you have a studied entity who assess the pros and the cons and start to tell you that VAT, which was, I think it was initially proposed at one level and then it went down. There was a fight, well, not fight, but a discussion, and it came at 7. Then it increased to whatever the rate was, and then it reduced down to 10%. And here they come suggesting that if you can't do the income tax thing, then you may at least need to be thinking about putting up your tax to 15%, in their own words, in line with regional peers. So like Jamaica, which is, I think, 17 or whatsoever number that is, and some other place which is very high. Yeah. The takeaway from me from the discussion around taxation, and I think the IMF was reasonable in recognizing and accepting the fact that the administration may have challenges in making that happen or making it happen easily. But then out of that recognition, readily went on to suggest a number of other means, including looking, I think it talks about, taxing some other areas, reducing in some areas, but increasing in other areas so that you can make the numbers. But when a studied institution does that in a very deliberate fashion and report it, it cannot be that it's coming from absolutely nowhere. It is my view, that all things considered, while our revenue right now is at a level which is good, there is a question mark over the sustainability. And this is not a point of blame for anybody. This is not a fault of the current administration at all. It is what it is. It is at a level. The circumstances which prevail currently may be demanding more. And the question is, where from will the more come? How will that more be implemented? As simple as that. It's not blame. It's not saying you got it wrong. It is saying, here are the realities. Here is what has been done fantastically. Booming tourism. Yeah? Many persons will say, well, tourism must be booming because there was this pent-up demand. Well, here's how I look at it. If tourism tanked tomorrow and went down by 5%, everybody will be saying the Deputy Prime Minister, Honorable Chester Cooper, is to be blamed because he caused it to drop. Many people would say that. For whatever reason it dropped, they would say he caused it. So if it is rising when he's there, then you have to give the people there the credit. It's as simple as that. That's just how the thing works. Even if somebody else had put all of the plans in place, then step away and somebody now presides over it, they get the credit. But the point is, what are the things we need to pay attention to, having regard to the things that we have gotten right? The things we have gotten right, the things which are going well, but there is still signal that there is more needed. Everything is not fully yet sustained. How are we going to do that? We have to figure out where we go from here. And that's why when the IMF says we need to now reorient our policy position, that's exactly what we need to do. And I believe that we must pay attention to what it is saying. It's suggestions. There's no dictates inside there. They certainly can't tell the Prime Minister what to do. They certainly can't tell the Financial Secretary what to do or members of the Cabinet what to do. But they're good suggestions. Be guided. Use it. twist it, adapt it, change it, throw that one out, think about what the impact is going to be, but use it in a productive way to see how we can get this thing moving forward. Another line from the report says, rising potential growth beyond 1.5% and improving social outcomes entail a reorientation of spending towards education, healthcare, targeted social transfer, and infrastructure. Bottlenecks related to the reliability of energy transmission and the shortage of skilled labor need to be addressed. In other words, here are some things which we have identified which are likely to be limitations, bottlenecks they call them, but they are exerting downward adverse influence on your growth. It says rising potential growth beyond 1.5%. In other words, if you are going to get beyond this 1.5%, you need to start thinking about how you improve outcomes as it relates to your spending in education, your spending in healthcare, the way you deal with social transfers. How do the government help people who are impoverished? How that money is used? Is it empowering them? Do you get them back to get them back into school? Are they doing skills training? Or are we just giving them some money and they buy some food and then they come back for some more later? How has that been done? The bottlenecks related to the reliability of energy transmission. There it is. Your policy position on energy, ubiquitous energy, touches every productive sector in the country. What is the policy on that? How is that going to be shaped, reshaped, reformed? Because if that is fixed to the positive, it will have attendant positive impact right throughout the economy, socially, at the business level, personally, all kind of colleagues. And this is why I said earlier that I believe that we should pay attention to what is there. Policy orientation is imperative in unlocking the country's economic potential. Policy orientation is important, is necessary, is fundamental in unlocking the country's economic potential. Why is this so? Because we have a bag of things, and in that bag of things, some things are working and some are not. That bag of things tell us that we can get yay value. But as long as only some works, the value is going to be less than what we can actually glean. Suboptimal, yeah? In order to get to that full blast potential, we have to fix the stuff in the bag. And once the things in the bag have been fixed, they then become foundational for us to recast a new level of expectation for growth. And that's exactly what it is. Right now, we're stuck at growth below 2%. 1.5 maximum as projected by them, 1.8. 1.6, then 1.5 in 27, 28, trending downwards. So if we are locked into that level, but we can change that to get that up to a solid 2.5, then 3%. Certainly the things that we would have done to get to 3%, the result that we would have realized as a result of being at 3%, let's say for a couple of years, the additional productivity, the additional expansion in employment, the additional earning of foreign currency and so on and so forth, then sets a foundation for us to now start thinking, well, it's 4 or 5% or 6% ought to be our next goal. So it's always about tweaking. You know, persons who may be into car racing or just high-performance car would readily appreciate that an individual who races, takes the same engine and fiddles with it continuously tweaking, changing, fixing, swapping out, looking for that extra edge, one extra second, one quicker rev, the gear changing faster. Well, you know, I'm not a mechanic, so I don't know all of these things, but, you know, just off the top of my head, doing things a little bit more efficiently, using gas way more efficient, so you don't have to make as much pit stop as the other guy. These are, in my mind, what this report is kind of saying. Let's tinker some more with the things which we know are not working. Let's not be shy. Let's be emboldened by the fact that the economic affairs of the country is better than it was. You have now more space. You definitely need to create greater headroom going forward because we still have the debt and the cost of debt and so on to grapple with. We still have to create more headroom because we need to build for climate resilience. We need to have enough to tuck away for a rainy day just in case something big come happening down the road. These things are only going to be realized as a result of growth, as a result of improvement, as a result of, and as we come to the end, I think this is an important point I want to make. These things are going to happen as a result of government working in concert with the private sector, in serious concert, where the government plays its role as lead facilitator and the private sector plays its role as innovator and productive sector. No little willy-nilly thing saying, hey, government not doing this, go do your work. And government shouldn't be on the other side saying, yeah, private sector not doing this, get to work. The fact of the matter, though, is we have a foundation laid, which coming out of the COVID pandemic, many of us would not have expected us that we would be here at this point in time, right now, right this very minute. So the opportunity is here. The foundation has been laid. Kudos should be given to those who are in charge, the current administration, for what they have done to date. But the work certainly isn't done by no stretch of the imagination. And in fact, failing to do what the IMF suggests, not necessarily in the way the IMF suggested it, but the reorientation, the looking at the policy, failing to do that runs the potential of losing what has been gained up to this point in time in a very serious way. So my sentiment tonight is basically, the country is definitely in a better place. There's growing, there's improvement, tourism is booming. But there are some challenges, there's some downside, there's some issues which need to be fixed. And government need to work on that. And I think I should say this when I say government, we should also include the opposition. Nobody off the hook. Everybody should be working in the same direction. Shouldn't be limited to critique. We need the proposal of solid policy. You know, don't save it until you get in. Share it now. And I believe that if we start to do these things, if we start to work in the direction, I'm not saying take the policy as suggested. I'm saying think about the broad message in the report and the direction it's pointing in. I think if we do these things, if we start to look at the country through that lens, great things will happen. If we start to think about all the policy positions, all the things, all the structural challenges which have lagged for a number of years, which can now be addressed, I believe great things will change, will happen for the future. It's right now, it's right here, and it's time to lay the foundation for the next 20, 50 years. That's as much as I have to say tonight. You've been listening to The Essentials. We always end by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. All that is left to say is, be good, walk good, one love, and Ubuntu. Good night.
experience from dependence to independence. Journey, journey on. Well, now I have loved and I have been loved. I have judged and I have been judged. Journey.